There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, the Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 15, titled The Invaders. This episode was written by Richard Matheson and Rod Serling, directed by Douglas Hayes, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant and Jerry Goldsmith. In the cast were Agnes Moorhead, and voice only of Douglas Hayes. Its original air date was January 27th of 1961, and you can watch it on Tubi TV, Freevee TV, Paramount Plus, or the DVDs and Blu-rays. And again, as I always say, if you have the ability, buy the Blu-rays. I know a lot of people are going away from physical media now, and certainly with everything streaming and everything that can be purchased and owned digitally in this age, I'm still ancient and still like my physical media with certain things, and Twilight Zone being one of them. So, as again, I encourage everyone, if you have the ability, buy the Blu-rays. It's quite well worth it. Again, as always, if you haven't heard this episode or haven't seen this episode since it first aired, or within the 60 to 70 years hence, stop this recording and go watch the episode and come back and listen to the rest of this episode of the podcast, because there will be spoilers. Spoiler being, this is a great episode. How's that for a spoiler? That's not a spoiler, though, because if you're listening to this, you probably already know that, and I'm not telling you anything new. But if you haven't seen this episode or need a refresher, go watch it before you listen to this episode of the podcast, because there will be spoilers, as there always are, because there's always some sort of twist or some sort of turn in the story that no one anticipates and no one expects. And that's part of what we really love about the Twilight Zone, isn't it? So with that, let's get into the opening narration. This is one of the out-of-the-way places. The unvisited places. Bleak. Wasted. Dying. This is a farmhouse. Handmade. Crude. A house without electricity or gas. A house untouched by progress. This is the woman who lives in the house. A woman who's been alone for many years. A strong, simple woman whose only problem up until this moment has been that of acquiring enough food to eat. A woman about to face terror, which is even now coming at her from the Twilight Zone. So, this is a story of a woman who lives a very simple existence in a, I wouldn't say desolate, but certainly remote and or rural part of the world, where she lives by herself. She's an older woman. If you want to know how old, Agnes Moorhead played this character, and she was approximately 60 years old when she filmed this episode, maybe 61, depending on when her birthday falls. I'd have to, you know, look at it. But she was born in 1900. This episode appeared on television in 1961. Assuming they shot it in the late 1960, I would assume she would either be 60 or 61 years of age, depending on if they may have shot it in the beginning of 1961, you never know. But it appeared in January of 61. I doubt they would have shot it in the beginning of January and aired it at the end of January. I wouldn't think it would have moved that fast back then. But here we are. So this is a woman living alone, living in a rural, very simple, very meager, hand-to-mouth existence. And she is visited by space creatures. Now, I always love the extraterrestrial or visitors from another planet sort of part of sci-fi. I always have. Movies like The Blob or Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know, things like that. I've always loved those kind of sci-fi movies also. Even when you get into the waning years of those kind of things before the new resurgence of, you know, sci-fi stuff. Even campy movies like, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes or Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I don't know why, but they hold a special place, in my mind, in my heart, just for the campiness, if nothing else. And I've always loved them. And I've always loved, even if you go back to the old time radio programs back in the day of X-1 or, Dimension X, the old time radio programs that dealt with things like that, and even go so far back as to go to War of the Worlds from the Mercury Radio Theater in Orson Welles, still to this day, a fantastic and very, it's just one of the best radio plays ever recorded. And if you don't know much about that, do a little bit of some rabbit hole Google searching to discover the War of the Worlds 1939 broadcast by Orson Welles in the Mercury Radio Theater and the panic surrounding said broadcast. It's quite something and quite awesome. And I will admit, the first time I heard the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, granted it wasn't in 1939, but I was a child when I heard it. I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I will say I was enthralled by it and scared and nervous and all the, you know, everything that happened with that radio program. It was just so well done that even as a child, I was sucked into it as well. And I'm not telling any tales out of school here. I was definitely brought into the suspense of the program. And Orson Welles and his band of players certainly did a fantastic job on that program. And that brings us to this episode of The Twilight Zone, where we have Agnes Moorehead fighting off alien invaders that land on her farmhouse roof and decide to wreak havoc upon her in the only way that something 4 inches tall wearing a Michelin Man outfit can do. This episode is known in the Twilight Zone for only having one little bit of dialogue, and that was spoken by Douglas Hayes, who played the voice of one of the space invaders. But I will say, I did like the opening and seeing Rod Serling come on screen. It's another one of those Rod just appears into the picture in the moment, I know we've talked about this before and we will talk about it again, where in the later seasons, you no longer see Rod Serling appearing in the picture in the cold open of the episodes where he comes in and does his introduction, mainly because he was on two other things at that point in his career, and so he would fly out to California and record, you know, over the course of a couple of days, pretty much record all of the intros to all of the episodes of the season, and then he would go back east to where he was teaching in college. And like I said, we will talk more about that when we get later on into the series. And I wouldn't mind at some point doing a deep dive retrospective into Rod Serling's life and his success as a writer, television producer, host, etc., etc. But that will be for a later time. So, Agnes Moorehead living alone in this farmhouse, the only woman, the only person technically in the cast, if you don't count the voice of director Douglas Hayes. But we can't talk about this episode without talking about Agnes Moorehead a little more and what she did a number of years before this episode of The Twilight Zone. Now, what did she do, Bill? Well, that's a good question, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you what she did. She appeared in a radio play from 1943 titled Sorry, Wrong Number, which was on the Suspense radio program, which if you are a fan of old-time radio and you don't know about the Suspense radio program, do yourself a favor and look into it because it is one of the best radio programs of the time. But Agnes Moorehead was in this episode of Suspense and played the only character in the radio program named Mrs. Stevenson. This radio play was written by Lucille Fletcher and performed on the Suspense radio program on May 25th of 1943. Now, what's interesting about this radio play? Well, that's a good question. I would love to answer that for you. If I may take a page out of Elise Myers' videos and say, that's a great question. I would love to answer that for you. What is interesting about this play is, first of all, it was written by Lucille Fletcher, who we know in The Twilight Zone, and we have heard of in The Twilight Zone, because why? Because she wrote the episode, or she wrote the story that the episode The Hitchhiker is based upon, which was written by her and based on a story from her actual life, from a road trip that her and her husband, Mr. Bernard Herrmann, who does a lot of the music for The Twilight Zone, it was based on a story from their life when they were married and they took a road trip and that sort of thing. Go back and listen to The Hitchhiker, the episode The Hitchhiker that I do or did on this podcast, and I talk about her in a little more detail then, and that whole situation with her and her husband and the road trip they took, where they saw a man in a shabbily dressed suit at different points along their route of their road trip, and it was the basis for the episode The Hitchhiker. Well, she hit it out of the park again with the 1943 suspense radio drama Sorry, Wrong Number. Now, what's interesting about this episode, and like I said, I'd love to tell you, is that Agnes Moorehead was the only member of the cast of that radio program. It was an entire half-hour radio program of suspense where she is the only voice actor. So it was kind of groundbreaking at the time, And certainly one of the most beloved and most talked about episodes of the radio program Suspense. Now, with that being said, Miss Fletcher has now went from 1943 to 1961. Now, I will say as a side note, they did make Sorry Wrong Number into a major motion picture starring Barbara Stanwyck and Burt Lancaster, which was quite a well-done movie. Certainly had enough star power in it, and so on and so forth, from 1948, so 5 years after she wrote the picture, after she wrote it and it was on Suspense, there was a movie made of that. And then, of course, in the same year, 1948, Barbara Stanwyck was on the Jack Benny radio program, which, again, if you like old-time radio programs and you don't know about the Jack Benny program, oh my goodness, do yourself a favor. It is, you'll laugh from start to finish on all of them. It's they're well done. Very well done. That man was one heck of an entertainer, and so was the people that were with him, like Dennis Day and Mary Livingston, and of course, who could forget the inimitable Phil Harris, who was the band leader on the Jack Benny program, who went on also to have his own radio program with his wife called the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, and who also went on to voice several different cartoon characters, including Baloo in The Jungle Book. So, very, very well done on all those people. Now, the Sorry Wrong Number, if you're interested, is about Mrs. Stevenson, who is an invalid and who is trying to call her husband, and through a mix-up in the phone lines, intercepts a phone call between two men plotting a murder for that evening. She tries to enlist the help of the telephone operator, the police, and a hospital, becoming more and more frantic as time passes. In the final moments of the play, spoiler alert, she realizes that she is the intended victim and her husband is to be the murderer, or is at least behind the murder plot. So, again, all Agnes Moorehead throughout the entire episode. It's just her talking, and it's a great, great suspense program and a great just radio play in full stop, you know, in its entirety. And I definitely recommend giving it a listen after you listen to this, and tell all your friends and neighbors and relatives to like, comment, subscribe, anywhere you get your podcasts, because why not? So I went off on that little 10-minute detour, I should say, into Sorry Wrong Number, to say that Agnes Moorehead from 1943 and then to 1961 went from being in a radio play where she was the only one talking the entire time to a half-hour sci-fi anthology series where she spoke not a word throughout the entire runtime of the episode. And the fact that she could do both so well, I think, speaks volumes to her ability as an actress in radio and in television. So why is this interesting? It's interesting because there wasn't another radio program or television program like this before this episode, where the main protagonist, and really no one else save a couple of lines from, you know, a little finger puppet dressed like the Michelin Man, did any dialogue not exist in the main characters. So, quite interesting stuff. So we get Agnes Moorehead living in this farmhouse, sort of bleak, rural, desolate area, trying to survive on whatever food she can gather and live upon. We get Rod come in with his opening narration and tell us about her existence and about what's about to happen. And then we hear the ever-present Twilight Zone flying saucer noises, followed by a thud on the roof, which kind of jars the house, which kind of knocks Agnes Moorehead to the ground. And she goes up to investigate, and she finds a flying saucer that has landed on her roof. Of course, she is frightened, and she starts to investigate it. The little hatch opens, and a little man starts to walk out. He shoots her in the shoulder and the hands with his little ray gun. She knocks him off into her house, and another one comes up and tries to shoot at her. She knocks him off the roof with her little lantern or lamp, I guess you could say. She goes back into her house. And the suspense really starts to go from there, because she's being accosted from every nook and cranny, it seems, by these little spacemen. And the little ray gun they had actually put blisters on her. One of them gets a knife and cuts her twice. She bashes one in a sheet, and eventually, after going through the house and being mortified, being terrified, and going out of her mind, trying to find out where these creatures are, where they're from, and trying to bash them and beat them and make them go away, she finally gets back up to the roof. And she hears a voice speaking, which of course is Douglas Hayes, the director, and he is saying that he's calling his central control, saying that the other astronaut's dead, the ship is destroyed, because Agnes Moorehead comes up there with an axe and bashes the spaceship real good, bashes it to pieces. It can no longer fly. And she hears one of the astronauts radioing his central control, saying that there's a race of giants. Do not send backup, because there's no way they can beat him. His partner's dead, and that they should stay away forever, and that, you know, they're both doomed. But that they shouldn't send anyone else to rescue or anything, because they're just going to be dead. And Agnes Moorehead looks at the spaceship, and of course we pan over, and we see that it is in fact a U.S. spaceship that landed on her roof to investigate a strange new world, and got bashed to bits and killed by an impoverished woman living in a ramshackle farmhouse somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And then we get the closing narration. These are the invaders. The tiny beings from a tiny place called Earth, who would take the giant step across the sky to the question marks that sparkle and beckon from a vastness of the universe only to be imagined. The invaders, who found out that a one-way ticket to the stars beyond has the ultimate price tag. and we have just seen it entered into a ledger that covers all transactions in the universe. A bill stamped paid in full, and to be found on file in the Twilight Zone. And that ends the end of the episode. Agnes Moorehead smashes the flying saucer until she can't lift her arm anymore, and says not a word of dialogue in the entire 23 minutes of the episode. And this episode goes into the realm of infamy as one of the most talked about episodes of the Twilight Zone. Now, I really loved this episode. I really did. Agnes Moorehead was great. I know a lot of people are going to complain, oh, all she does is just grunt and scream and holler and doesn't say a word and blah, 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 and all this. And yeah, I mean, from an acting standpoint, we're not talking about Othello here. You know, we're not talking about, we're not talking about Shakespeare. We're not talking about, you know, anything like that. We're talking about literally being able to convey sadness, anger, fear, and suspense using those grunts and facial expressions and body language. And if you're going to give anyone a masterclass on how to do that, this 22-minute program is definitely where it's at. You won't find it better, or you won't find it, you'll find it as good, but you may not find it better. And certainly Agnes Moorehead did a fantastic job in this, and the same as she did when she was the only person in the cast in 1943 suspense play. Sorry, wrong number. Both well done. Both well done by the same woman. And this woman was fantastic. And I like this episode. Is it a top 5? No. Is it a top 10? No. Is it a top 20? Probably. But, it's fantastic. It is a fantastic episode. It is certainly one of the flagship episodes of the series that if you were going to show it to someone who's never seen The Twilight Zone, this wouldn't be a bad one to start with. You know what I mean? Especially if it's someone who loves sci-fi. It's a great... it's a great thing, great, well done all the way around, and just a fantastic episode. And again, like I said, go listen to the Suspense Radio play, Sorry, Wrong Number, and then go listen to Jack Benny's program from 1948, the year the movie was released, and watch the movie too. Why not? How can you go wrong with Barbara Stanwyck and Burt Lancaster? You can't. And so there you go. What I did like about this episode, and I guess I'll talk about it in the likes and dislikes, was the fact that it was a very suspenseful episode. If it didn't have the sci-fi twist to it, it could have been an Alfred Hitchcock program, to be honest. It was very good. Very well done. All the way around on behalf of the writers and director, so on and so forth. Now, it's funny that we have writers credited, including Richard Matheson, literally one of the best sci-fi writers that ever lived, and certainly Rod Serling. It's funny to say that there's writers on an episode where the only lines of dialogue is Rod Serling's opening monologue and Douglas Hayes' little bit of voice acting when he plays the lone survivor of the intergalactic trip, and he only speaks a paragraph of lines. Not really needing a Pulitzer Prize-winning author to pen that, but you know what? It all works. and it all works well. Certainly there has to be direction and everything done. And Douglas Hayes did fantastic at that. But I think we should move into the bios. Now, there's only going to be one this week, because we talked about Douglas Hayes in previous episodes. He certainly, this was not his first episode directing, but this, however, was his last episode that he directed for The Twilight Zone. But he had some stellar episodes of The Twilight Zone that he directed. If you want to listen to his actual bio, go back to season 1, episodes 11, When the Sky Was Opened, and I talk more in depth about him there. But he directed that episode, Elegy, about the spacemen that wind up on in Happy Glades, resting home on the planet. Directed The Chaser, which was about a guy that wanted to get a woman's love and affection, to where he paid for a love potion to do so. And, you know, it goes from there. He also directed episode 34 of season 1, The After Hours, which, of course, is another one of the most well-talked about Twilight Zone episodes. And then when you get into season 2, he directed Nervous Man in a $4 Room, which was a great episode. The Howling Man, which, again, one of my favorites of all time. Eye of the Beholder, which is certainly, that's probably the flagship Twilight Zone episode that everyone seems to know. And he also directed season 2, episode 12, Dust, which we talked about, which, if you want to go back and listen to it, also talks about the Emmett Till murder. And then lastly, but not leastly, he directed season 2, episode 15, The Invaders. So again, if you want to listen to his bio, go back to And When the Sky Was Opened, and you will hear more about him. But let's talk about the star of the show, Agnes Moorehead. Now, Agnes Moorehead was born in 1900 in Boston, or just outside of Boston, the daughter of a Presbyterian minister, and her mother, also who encouraged her to perform in church programs, which is where you could say she got her start in acting. Now, Agnes was born in 1900, passed away in 1974, so she was only alive about another 13 years after this episode aired. Now, at age 3, she sang The Lord Is My Shepherd on a public stage, and 7 years later, at the age of 10, joined the St. Louis Municipal Opera as a dancer and singer for 4 more years. And her father, always wanting her to finish her education, Agnes attended Muskingum College in Ohio and subsequently the University of Wisconsin. She graduated with a master's degree in English and public speaking, and later added a doctorate in literature from Bradley University to her resume. Agnes used her higher education to teach public school English and drama for 5 years. In between, she went to Paris to study pantomime with Marcel Marceau. In 1928, she began training at the American Academy for Dramatic Arts and graduated with honors the following year. To make money, Agnes appeared in radio, and she took all the jobs in radio that she could get. And her love of radio stayed with her for the rest of her life. From the 30s to the 50s, she appeared in numerous serials, dramas, and television and children's radio programs. including Terry and the Pirates, the Gumps, Margot Lane in The Shadow, Mrs. Danvers in Rebecca, and of course, 1943's Sorry, Wrong Number. Agnes loved radio so much that when she got a contract with MGM, she made it a stipulation in her contract that she would be able to do radio programs whenever she wanted to during her contract with MGM. And through her radio work on The Shadow and 1937's March of Time, she met and befriended fellow actor Orson Welles. Welles soon invited her to join him and Joseph Cotten as character members of his Mercury Theater on the air. Why is this important? Well, you remember me talking earlier about the radio drama War of the Worlds by the Mercury Radio Theater? Well, guess who was also on that? You guessed it. Agnes Moorehead. Now, the subsequent attention that War of the Worlds broadcast got everyone, and my apologies, that was in 1938 and not 1939. My apologies for misquoting that earlier. But the attention that War of the Worlds got resulted in a lucrative $100,000 per picture deal with RKO Pictures in Hollywood. And the Mercury Players, including Everett Sloan, Paul Stewart, and George Koulouris, went to Hollywood to make pictures. Now, the awesome thing about Agnes Moorehead was that you really couldn't typecast her. She was one of those people that, very similar to, say, Meryl Streep or Kathy Bates, that kind of person, that caliber of actress, you couldn't typecast her. Her first picture, of course, going back to the RKO days, her first motion picture was playing Charles Foster Kane's mother in Citizen Kane, 1941. She also achieved great critical acclaim with her on-screen performance as Aunt Fanny Minifer in The Magnificent Ambersons in 1942. And this led her to being voted the best female performer in New York Film Critics Society in 1942, and was also nominated for an Academy Award that same year. She would be nominated three more times for an Academy Award as playing Baroness Conti in Miss Parkington in 1944 for her role as the title character's Aunt Aggie in Johnny Belinda in 1948, and for playing Velma, the hard-boiled, suspicious housekeeper of Betty Davis in Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte in 1954. Other notable appearances in movies were her part in The Woman in White in 1948, where she played a 105-year-old woman in The Lost Moment in 1947, and in also 1947, The Dark Passage, a classic film noir which she co-starred in alongside Mr. Humphrey Bogart and Miss Lauren Bacall. Now, she also appeared in a 1959 movie titled The Bat, which was kind of a schlocky sort of horror movie. On top of being a great radio performer as well as a very critically acclaimed film, I don't want to say bit player, but certainly a film star, she also appeared on plays in Broadway, including All the King's Men and Candlelight, also in Don Juan in Hell and Prescription Murder. Now, what's interesting about prescription murder? Well, that's a good question. I'd love to tell you. Prescription murder was the thing that introduced to the world Mr. Lieutenant Columbo, which would also be the name of the very first made-for-TV Columbo movie starring Peter Falk, Prescription Murder. If you've never seen it, holy cow, it's my favorite of the Columbo, television show or movies, what have you. They called them shows, but they were actually just made-for-TV movies, but they did like 5 or 6 in a year. And so, or 3 or 4 in a year, I can't remember. All well done, all awesome, all Peter Falk, all the time. But Prescription Murder was one of the best, it's in my opinion, it is the best of the Columbo series, and it was the first one. So, check it out if you have the time. Now, this woman did all this from singing on stage to the age 3 to being in the St. Louis opera and ballet as a singer and dancer, to being on Broadway, to being in one of the best radio plays ever made, and one of the most iconic Twilight Zone episodes ever made, to being, again, in Broadway and in pictures that have been still talked about to this day, like Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte, and, of course, Citizen Kane, all to be remembered for playing Endora, Elizabeth Montgomery's mother, on Bewitched, which was actually not a role she really wanted to be remembered for, even though it was basically the last role she ever had before she passed away, sadly. So her years of studying with Marcel Marceau certainly paid off in this episode of The Twilight Zone. But sadly, the world really, especially anyone under the age of 60, really only knows her for playing Endora on Bewitched, even though she did so much better and, just better stuff than a campy 1960s television program. Even though I do love me some Elizabeth Montgomery, and certainly love me some Agnes Moorehead, but she was remembered for Bewitched most of all. And that'll do it for our bios this week. Why don't we move on to trivia? So, this was Rod Serling's favorite episode from someone besides him that didn't write it. Again, as stated, this episode is a direct counterpoint to her starring in Sorry Wrong Number in the Suspense Radio program in 1943, since in that episode she speaks every line of dialogue, where in this episode she speaks no lines of dialogue. This is the only episode with only one person who has no lines. The spoken dialogue of the unknown aliens, who turn out to be humans, of course, was done by director Douglas Hayes. When Agnes Moorehead originally was interested in the role, she learned she had no dialogue in the episode, and she initially refused to do it. It was only by Douglas Hayes and Rod Serling coming to see her and convincing her to do it that she decided to do it. The tiny astronauts were actually finger puppets made of foam, which took 2 hands to operate. 2 fingers worked the arms and 2 worked the legs. As in other episodes, this one uses the United States Planet Cruiser C-57D spacecraft from Forbidden Planet, of course, because, you know, recycling you know, isn't just in vogue now. It was in vogue in, you know, the 50s and 60s. At various times, the invader aliens emit a series of beeps. This is, in fact, Morse code. They seem to be purely for effect, however, as they don't convey any message relating to the plot or anything intelligible. And people have done, you know, people have looked into this. Director cameo, Douglas Hayes, as the voice of the astronaut. The name of one of the invaders or astronauts is either Grisham or Gresham. Gus Grissom was one of the original Mercury 7 NASA astronauts and the command pilot of the Gemini 3. He was killed in a fire in Apollo 1 during a pre-launch test on January 27, 1967, exactly 6 years to the day after this episode aired. Again, Miss Moorhead's performance drew heavily on her study of pantomime with Marcel Marceau. The sound just before the ramp of the spaceship lowers is the same sound the communicators on the man from UNCLE make to alert a call coming in. At the time of the broadcast of this episode, NASA had been in existence for several years. However, the spacecraft was discovered to be a U.S. Air Force probe. The year of the broadcast was the same year that U.S. conducted an underground nuclear test called NOME. And the broadcast is, of course, from 1961. Now, of course, if you want to learn more about our NASA space program, also do a little research, and I hate to get too far into the weeds or sound like I have a tinfoil hat on, but get do some Googling of Operation Paperclip to see where NASA get kind of its start from. Many years later, miniature versions of Silver Space Invaders were released officially as officially licensed Twilight Zone items. I actually have one. It was a birthday gift for my wife. It's pretty cool if you like that sort of thing. And this was, of course, the final episode directed by Douglas Hayes. So with that, let's get into the goofs of the episode, and there were a couple. This may be, you know, attributed to artistic license. However, when Rod Serling appears, you know, in the same frame with Agnes Moorhead when he does the opening narration, he is the same visual scale as the old woman. Technically, if he were a human, he would not be the same size as the old woman living in the ramshackle house. But again, he's Rod Serling, host of the Twilight Zone. He can be whatever he wants to be. The isolated woman leads a meager existence with no luxuries in sight. Her hands, however, in several close-ups, showcase her long, tapered, and finely manicured and polished fingernails, something that a woman living a meager existence in hand-to-mouth daily grind probably wouldn't have. She's throwing a lot of lit candles and oil lamps around without creating a major blaze in an old ramshackle house, which seems like that wouldn't necessarily happen. When the spaceship is first shown rotating, the strings controlling it are clearly visible. And that's pretty much it for the goofs. Now, with one last one being, of course, her fingernails go from being long and tapered to flat on the ends, depending on if they had to have a different hand model or depending on if they had to come back and do reshoots on close-ups of her hands, what have you. So, this was a great episode. Let's talk about the likes and the dislikes. This was a great episode. Certainly Agnes Moorehead was an accomplished and fantastic actress who deserved every accolade she ever got and some she didn't get. And this was a great cinematographic and directorial masterpiece by Douglas Hayes. And certainly the story and the writing from Richard Matheson and Rod Serling are fantastic as well. And even the opening and closing narrations are fantastic. I mean, you can't say enough. It's just a great episode. And I know there's some that are like, well, I don't, if I want to listen to a woman grunt and scream for 30 minutes, I just won't watch it. And, you know, it's more than that. It's suspense. It's drama. It's everything. It's all rolled into one. It's fear. It's the woman conveys every emotion possible in the span of 22 minutes. And it's fantastically done. It's greatly done. And it's done by a master of the craft, Miss Agnes Moorehead. Sadly, like I said, she will only be remembered as playing Endora on Bewitched. And even nowadays, people forget that exists. You know, if you're at the age of 45, you probably don't even know Bewitched is actually a thing. But I digress. What did I not like about it? Honestly, my only shortcoming I saw in this episode was the, I hate to say the word, the schlockiness, I guess, of the spacecraft and the quote-unquote aliens. But they had to work with what they had at the time, and finger puppets and a borrowed Forbidden Planet spaceship was the best they could do. And again, if you were looking at it on a, you know, 15-inch black and white television in 1961, this was probably groundbreaking. And it was certainly well done, even with that. So with that, let's get to the casting of the episode. Well, we only have to cast one person, don't we? We have to fill the role of the old woman by Agnes Moorehead. And honestly, and I have two choices of who I would choose to have done it today. One would be Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, because she can convey a lot of emotion in her face. Very accomplished actress, very good actress, and certainly no stranger to the sci-fi or suspense or, you know, that sort of genre of film or television. Or, as an outside, Catherine O'Hara, who, of course, was Kevin's mom on Home Alone, or Moira Rose in Schitt's Creek, on top of about 1,000 other things, including SCTV and pretty much every Christopher Guest movie ever made. The woman's just fantastic. And she's just fantastic. But she's another woman who can convey a lot of emotion in her face. And you need that sort of, she can move like no other. And I would almost say Catherine O'Hara over Jamie Lee Curtis, but I'm kind of torn between the two of them. But that would be my casting choice for this episode. And as far as the moral or philosophy is concerned, well, I don't really know. I can't really say. Maybe it's an allegory of us taking over places that we shouldn't be taking over as a country. Maybe it's an allegory of or maybe it's an idea of staying in your own existence. I can't really say. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Let's do that. Send me an email of what your thoughts on the moral or philosophy of this episode is. I'd love to hear it. I would love to hear it. Email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear what you think the moral or philosophy of this story is. So I think that'll bring this one in for a close. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, tell a buddy, bring a friend, subscribe, like, comment, tell everyone, put it on the bulletin board at school, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You know, more than 18 followers is what I'm looking for, which would be awesome, because I'd like as many people as possible to know about this television series. And I'm hoping I reach enough people that we keep this thing going. Just the idea, the memory, the love of this television series alive. I don't think it's something that'll ever truly die, but I certainly want to do my part to keep it going as well. And with that, we'll bring it to a close. Stay tuned for next week's episode, when we will, in keeping with a Bewitched theme apparently, be watching a television program where Darren Stevens, also played by Mr. Dick York, plays a man who has a run-in with a quarter, and it changes his life for at least a day. So stay tuned for next week's episode, A Penny for Your Thoughts. And until then, stay safe, be safe, and thank you for listening, as always. Goodbye, everyone.